Hey, hi, hello, yo, what's up? And welcome to Sex and Everything in Between, where we ask the question, whose gender is it anyway?
Who are the LGBTQ+?
Yes, I wear foundation. Yes, I live with a man.
What is cisgender?
I am more man than you'll ever be.
When is porn okay?
My views on this one is like, I wish if this can happen each and every after 2 weeks or monthly.
Why are there so many nude scenes on TV? This is Sex and Everything in Between.
Welcome once again to another episode of our wonderful podcast. Today it is glowing. I am kind of feeling like I am drab next to the people before me. I should have dressed up. I should have done more. Thank you for joining us, guys. How are you? Don't get shy.
Please, not Yaya and I. Rubal, how are you? How are you, Tango?
I'm good. Now, can we get some intros, please? Introduce yourselves and let us know your gender pronouns as well.
It's how are you first? I think it's always good to come here. It's so difficult to introduce yourself. I don't want to lie to you. I always struggle with that. But my name is Yaya Mavundla. I'm a trans activist and I'm an artist. My pronouns are she and her.
Hello, my name is Niza J. I am an entertainer and a human rights advocate. My pronouns depends on the mood. No, but strictly his, him, he. But if we're girls and we get along and it's fun times, she, her. But my man can call me she because I'm his little girl. Hey, daddy.
Love to hear it. Now, I'm sure you guys were looking at this little corner over here and there's a bizarre little flower. Like on Beauty and the Beast, for some who might not know it. But this is our dearest friend on the show called the Rose Buddy. And our Rose Buddy is a little game we play to get things started. You're going to pick a name. You're going to pick a little clue from this little beautiful jar.
Oh my god! Whoever's
bravest. And you're going to try and guess the clue of who is this icon, whether they're queer or they've done something in the sex world.
Oh my god!
So whoever feels brave.
I hate those things.
Same.
Because,
like, what are we doing?
Yeah. Other than fighting, oh my gosh. No.
Read
no,
for
no,
us.
Kids, this kind of person who are allowed to dress like a woman. Huh? Other than fighting Portuguese colonies for four decades, this king had husbands who were allowed to dress like women. Who is she? No.
Should I help you?
Yes, please.
Is it Nzinga?
Absolutely correct.
There we go. Queen Zinga. King Queen Zinga.
So, see, I hate these things.
So Queen Zinga ruled the kingdoms of Ndongo and Matamba in the northern modern-day Angola. She assumed power after the death of her father and brother during a period of rapid growth in slave trade. Now, Nzinga led a four-decade military resistance against Portuguese dominion and is reserved for intelligence, military tactics, and diplomatic brilliance. Now, I'm sure you're wondering, where is the queerness of this all? Now, Nzinga's dubious sexual identity finds different accounts pointing to her heterosexual marriage, to female wives, and to a harem of men who dressed as women. She certainly transgressed gender binaries, answering only to King. Now, Beyonce wasn't the first to do that.
leading, King Ta.
You know, leading troops into battle and wearing both men's and women's clothing. Her female husbandry illustrates the queering of gender roles in Africa and traditionally less closely identified with biological sex. And that was Nzinga.
Amen. Shout out to
now I know something.
Welcome to 2024. Yeah.
Now, to kick it off, I want to go on both of your gender identities. How have you guys explored your gender identities throughout your lives until to this day?
Do you want to start?
Okay, I can start. It's been a wild journey for me, pretty wild. I think that's what I can say. Because obviously, there's the usual narrative. You go to, you grow up, you start wearing your mom's her shoes, her dresses. You try makeup and all of those things. So there's been that. Mm-hmm. But I think there came a very definitive point. I think the first thing that occurred to me was looking at the shape of my body, outside of clothes and whatever I'd put on it. But I realized that I had a very feminine shaped body, whatever that means, right? Mm. In terms of a small waist and hips that open up a certain way. And so that was the my first inkling towards, okay, there's something more to me than just what I can put on. Just what is there, what I've been given already transgresses what it should be, right? Because there's this understanding that men, quote unquote, should not have hips, right? If you have hips, things like that, you know? So that was my first encounter with self-defined gender transgression and self-affirmed and self-asserted, right? And then having that body then allowed me, and also being petite, allowed me to always get into things that were quote unquote designed for women. And by that, I mean clothing and shoes, and very easily, like without any hustle. Because I know that for much of my feminine presenting community, that's always a point of contention that, yes, I want to dress a certain way, but my body, my shoulders and everything, I never had that. I never dealt with that issue. So I literally could pick up anything and put it on. And that drove me towards a lot of feminine, quote unquote, coded clothing, right? And then in how I present myself, like I just introduced myself, you know, I don't mind she, her, hers pronouns. And that was something I carried in how I carry myself, in how I move in life, in how I interact with men, and how I interact with women, which has been very educational, right? Because yes, as much as I can espouse those pronouns, I also have to understand that as much as I represent feminine beings, I am not a woman, you know. And so it was rosy in the beginning, where it was just all about the external, this is how I dress. But once I started delving into those politics and identity, then it becomes tricky, right? Because then I have to navigate so many things with intelligence, with emotional intelligence, and with sensitivity. So it's still tricky to this day, right? Because gender is an ever evolving construct that we have to share with other people, right? We can never say, oh yeah, this is mine, and if I say this, then that's what works for everyone. That's not the case at all, you know? So generally started on a very superficial level, but I've now come to a very sort of political understanding and personal stance on my own.
And for you, Yaya?
Wow. I think for me, so I grew up in an area where really I didn't really have reference of other people other than you are a straight male and you are a straight woman. So that's all I knew until, of course, kids, you know, would mock you to say you don't look like them, you know, or you don't behave like them. Then that's when then, you know, I started then, oh, okay, then there could be a person that is not straight because the kids are not saying, no, when I was stubborn and. And then, I mean, 16 years later, when I moved to Durban, then I thought I was actually a gay man. And because also at that time, I didn't know of any other trans people, you know. And it's so funny because I actually worked for a trans, sorry, not a trans organization, an LGBTI organization, which then primarily worked with gay and lesbian people. So everything around me was just gay and lesbian. And so I was like, but still, man, you know, when you're in a space, you can tell, good, see, there is something that really is missing here. There isn't other people that look like you, that's identify things like you do, like, you know. So there was that. And up until then, I moved here to Joburg. Then I lived with Uzanele Mholi and taught me a lot about, you know, other terms, you know, within the LGBTI community. Then that's when I realized, actually, no, I'm actually a trans girl. And I think the more then I learned about trans people,
I realized, okay, this is actually me. And I think I became even more comfortable. I even became more creative.
Mm.
I started even, you know, anything that I wanted to do was then easier because I was doing it as myself and not the person that the world had said I was.
Mm. I love that. I mean, I'm even thinking now as an activist, what does that entail? You know, understanding your gender identity and your experiences. What goes into the day-to-day of being an activist?
It's so funny. I always say, for me, being an activist really happened by default, by just me living my life, you know. And I think a lot of people just saw my braveness and, you know, my resilience and thought, okay, this is activism work. I wouldn't even say it then became my passion then, because I think because of how aggressive people would be usually, I wanted to like just do away with anything that have to represent other people.
Mm.
And I just wanted to just live for me alone. But I think, you know, when something is a calling and it's just meant for you, then you find yourself having to do that. So of course, then it then meant I needed then to learn of other people's experiences, to be able then to speak to also other people, to encourage also other people to live, you know, their true self, which then sometimes, unfortunately, takes away from what I want to do, like in terms of like work that is going to bring in money, because you can imagine how many other trans people, even not even trans, queer people that come to me for advice. And sometimes I don't have the time or the answers, but I have to do it because I don't want them to come across as a person who's like, oh yeah, just because she is. And then she's like, you know, doesn't entertain anyone. So it's kind of difficult, but I think if something that you have to do it and you're meant to do it, you have to do it.
I mean, identity is constantly something that's changing. We're learning more about. Do you ever feel a pressure to like, know and be informed whenever someone, you know, asks you a question? I want to put that to both of you.
Yeah, with me, no. I think I learned that, you know, the moment then I'm going to live my life according to the book, I'll never be happy. You know, I really need to live based on what Yaya believes in. But then it doesn't mean that I need then to let everybody else live according to what I see or think.
Mm.
It's a two-edged sword, because I think the touching on a point that Yaya brought up, which is that when you hold position and when you hold space, there are people looking at you, right, as a point of reference, right, to say, okay, Niza said this, A, B, C, D, so I can use that as my matrix of defining myself, right? So there's a stability that you always have to offer, because people are like, ah, but you said this 2 years ago and now you're saying something completely different.
Absolutely.
So what does that mean, you know? But at the same time, I am someone who keep conformity away from me. Whatever everyone is saying about whatever, I do not identify with that, because again, I am very self-defined, very, you know, self-asserting. Having said that, though, I do understand that there are commonalities in our walk with gender, with expression, with living out, right? And so I think spaces like this are important, because this is where we then come together mutually and not, oh, I said something that someone else said in a similar article, but where we can be in the same room and understand each other's nuances and intricacies and use that to build a matrix of understanding for the greater community, because we don't have that. We take from that source and what that person said, but also there's history in there, there's context, there's time, right? For example, if Uyaya, you know, God forbid, had not lived to this point, right? Many people would say, oh, Uyaya was the most fabulous gay man I'd ever met, right, at the time. But because you've been granted the privilege of living this far, then they can say more and they can learn more from you. So that's the tricky balance that we have to find it in self-asserting, but also understanding that because of who we are as a community and how little theory and knowledge there is on who we are, there's a lot of experience, but not a lot of it is documented, right?
Yes.
We have to be willing to share and be vulnerable and make mistakes and say inappropriate things and not be politically correct, you know, and that's just the truth.
Yeah.
I mean, you were on a tightrope of controversy with, I think, one of your most infamous roles.
Me?
On Inceba.
Yeah. I'm just a supermodel. I don't know what you're talking about.
So tell me, what was it like just being in that writing room and just comparing also to other writing rooms? Were there healthy conversations on just, you know, depicting different sexualities and gender expressions? I mean, your character was quite defiant. I can't imagine what happened to them, what could have happened to them.
In real life. In real life, those people die. That's why I didn't go the traditional route. they had very good intentions, right? Mm. And again, that's why I'm saying it's important to be self-asserting, right? Because most of the people in that team, on that team, were openly queer and were very much like, yes, this is our journey. We're very open about it. But at the time, and I think still to this day, I am probably the one who presented as outwardly. I'm probably was the only one at that time, you know. Mm. From Fantuga, I've been rocking up in crop tops and heels and tights and see-through things and whatnot. And that's a different conversation altogether, right? Because that then informed the character. Because you can say someone is defiant in terms of how they think. Mm. But when they present themselves a certain way and they force you to confront because if I walk in, dressed in Jay in a t-shirt and jeans and I'm silent, it's like, oh, okay, maybe queer, maybe. But if I walk in and I'm in a bra, darling, and I'm still standing by the fact that, yes, I'm a man, now what? And I want to have a conversation about the fact that we're discussing closer manhood and traditional South African masculinity in the way that I'm just presenting, and then what, right? So I think even without thinking about it, that's what I offered to that experience, because the character was changed to sort of represent that in how they dressed and certain things about their physical appearance. Mm. But good intentions nonetheless, right? And I think their welcomeness and openness to me and to changing the character in that way speaks to that.
Mm. And I wonder now, is it always the same with every production you're in? Is it as smooth?
Nothing's ever smooth with me. I think it's been a tightrope to walk in the sense that people want to pigeonhole me and be like, he presents himself a certain way. And then I walk on your set and I demand a certain level of treatment and I perform a certain way, right? Mm. I deliver a certain level of professionalism that forces you to change the way in which you thought about me. So it's not always easy. There's definitely times where I have to assert myself. I was talking about this on another interview where people see how I carry myself and they want to be like, oh, he's the entertaining gay who's going to make us laugh the whole day. I'm like, not her, not she, not I, darling. You are in trouble if that's what you think about me. And I stand by that, and I'll never not stand by that.
Do you guys both think that that's what happens a lot within the communities we're in, where people will kind of box you into an identity?
Absolutely. I think that's one of the reasons why I haven't really worked on television like for a long time, because I refuse to be treated a certain way that I'm not comfortable at. Mm. I refuse to take little pages because I have to be included in spaces. I mean, there was a production that I was let go of because I didn't want to drive to Durban for like 6 hours and get there and then still work, where I could have just flew there for like an hour and then be able to rest and then work.
Why drive?
Do you understand? If it was somebody else, then they would have let the person fly. Do you understand? Mm. And then I must be paid little because, oh no, you are new at this. We are giving an opportunity, but I'm going to deliver the same performance that you would have, you know, been done by a different person. So as a trans person, most of the time, you get into a space and you have to accept the bare minimum because there's an opportunity that is rare. Mm. So I always say, it's okay, I'll create my own opportunities. And I'm so grateful that I took that faith of leap to say, do what you want to do and evolve the way that you see it fits for you, not how the industry says you should do it.
Mm.
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to bungle up gender expression identity here, which is gender expression or gender presentation is a person's behavior, mannerisms, interests, and appearance that are socially associated with gender, namely femininity or masculinity. When it comes to South Africans, why do you guys think they struggle with gender terms when it's something, when we look deeper into most of our languages, there's no he or she. Why does it seem to be a struggle in the country?
I don't even think it's a struggle. People are just plain rude. And they want to dictate of how you should behave, or this is how we see you and this is how you're going to be. It's not even a thing of people don't understand. I don't believe that. I really don't.
Yeah, it's so fascinating what she's saying. I was having this conversation just this past weekend. First things first, 1652 colonization, let's start there. Right, people are still caught up in that. But I was having this conversation about how so many things that people fight against, it's because it comes from a natural impulse. Right, when a yaya walks in who transgresses quote unquote whatever norms you have in your mind, something innately in you is attracted to that, because where we come from, I don't want to say it's normal, but it is the way things are. We don't abide by all these things that have been placed on us, right? So when you walk in and ubaba from wherever is like, yo, sugani madoda, it's an inner thing. Then Christianity comes in. Then colonization comes
in.
Then we then have that interaction where people are being rude and are being whatever it is that they want to be. But I think what the reason is that the goal to suppress us from who we were, and the power that lies in that, because I don't want to get too deep, but in history, who we are, gender transgressing people are powerful forces in our community, right? So stripping that away and stripping the love for that was one of the greatest accomplishments of whatever mission that the colonialist and whoever else was on, and the people who are still maintaining those things within our society, right? Because we can't only blame it on the colonialists. Some people in our community still want to enforce that for whatever reason, right? Because they understand what happens when you take away that power, when you take away the integral role that people like us play, right? Trans people, gender non-conforming people, non-binary people. They understand the power that lies in that. And they understand that in order to maintain the current status quo, keep them away, keep them at bay, right?
To go deeper actually into that, I'm reminded now of Siya Khumalo's book, You Have to Be Gay to Know God, and the concept that as people in the LGBTQIA+ community, our experiences allow us to connect more to these pieces of work or religion, you know, not to kind of even minus it out, but it's there. These ideas are all there. Do you feel that just outside of just even religion, the way that society is today, you have to be queer to know how to move around?
Listen, most of the time you find queer people being so creative because they are pushed to that, you know, edge to say you have to do it, you know. And that's why I really always find it so unfortunate when I see a queer person who is lazy, because I'm like, where are you getting the privilege? Because you know, we get the privilege through having buying access. You know, you have to buy your privilege with us. It just doesn't come. I know for a fact, if I had never worked this hard, there are many spaces where I would have never been, you know. And I always tell other trans people that are younger to say, can I tell you something? You even think just because you'll get into a reality show, you'll probably then succeed and be big. No, you still need to put in the work and do many other things to prove yourself to, not even just, you know, to yourself, only to other people to say, yes, she can. Yes, she's worthy, and many other things. If you think you're just going to get a spotlight and then the spotlight is going to get you in most spaces, it's not going to happen. I've seen it with many other, you know, queer people who would have, you know, the fame. But unfortunately, to have access to spaces that you need to get into, you need to have put in the work.
Yeah, you want to say something there?
Yeah, no, I just being other, I think, forces you to find something to hold on to. Because life tells you everything that we're holding on to, you can't hold on to it. You can't hold on to God. God is not for you. You can't hold
this
on
is not
to
your space.
Please try something else.
And they tell you boldly, this is not your space. You don't belong here.
So many things. And this is something that always stuck with me. When we first premiered in Ngcebo, Refilwe Modisela was there. And she spoke about how the film and the intention behind it opened doors for other conversations to be had about other communities of others in the country, right? So if you think about people with albinism, they're also told that there's certain things that you cannot access or you can't touch because of how you are. People who are differently abled, they are told the same thing, right? So I think being other in the current climate, yes, it forces you to know God more and know life more and know family more and know self-worth more and all of that. Absolutely. But I think innately it's a blessing, because without all of these boundaries and things holding us back, I think we would always be driven, because that otherness shines, right, in any way, shape or form. Maybe pre-colonially it would have shone in a good way. Currently it forces us to stand out and say this is who we are. But I think being other is something that has always been of value, and it just so happens that we live in a time where other people perceive it as diminished value, and like Yaya is saying, it's up to us to find that greater value.
It was a snap in there. Now I'm gonna give it to you.
It's like you
Now, I'm reminded of a moment in the first season of Becoming. I think it was Ujina talking to their family about their new name post-transition. And I found it so powerful and a very brave moment. It's one thing being able to go out in the public world and really push your activism, but it's another thing bringing it back home. How have you guys found bringing the activism back home?
So at home, I've never really had, you know, issues of them saying, you can't do this, you can't do that. But again, I look at it as if I bought my privilege, because I always say, I wonder if I didn't have anything, would they really treat me the same? And chances are no, you know. And I look at also other queer people that, you know, don't have access to many other things, how they are treated at home. So I think maybe it goes back to what we're saying earlier, to say in any spaces you buy your privilege with what you have, with what you do, with what you can do. And if there isn't that, any of that, unfortunately you are part of the minority that will be treated as less, that will be, you know, seen as unworthy and many other things.
Very true. I always say, apart from being the queer child for a long time at home, there's now many more hello girlies, hello yama. But I was also the exceptional child, right? So I did well at school and I was talented, blah, blah, blah. So that afforded me a lot of things where I was like, yeah, okay, but yeah, they're doing so well at school. And then moving into my career, same thing, right? Where it's like, this kid has done such amazing things for us and he continues, doesn't stop. But where I see it is in extended family members who may not instantly recognize, because I come from a big family. So by extended, I mean like people from far, like who aren't intimately close to my family. When they first encounter, they will want to say things, and my family will jump in and be like, don't you dare. Not this one, you know?
Because if you even didn't do well at school, you'd be that child. That's why you fail, because you're gay. Do you understand?
But is it not adding more pressure now to a toxic level when you are identifying such a different way to the other?
It does, absolutely. And I'm identifying it because in my family, there are a lot of people who aren't necessarily going the right way, right? And you see that's how the family defines them. Where it's like, you are defined by all your sins and all your transgressions and the fact that you've done A, B, C, D, E, F, G. And then even for, like I said, the younger generation coming after me, I can already see that it's happening again, where what they're focusing on is how well they're doing, right? Like I have a 14-year-old cousin where they're like, all they talk about is, they did so well. But the mom is, you know, like, you know, mtana mufana nawe, and I'm like, okay, I get what you're trying to say, but the rest of the family is focusing on the fact that, you know, they're doing well. And when you hear stories of the younger ones' upbringing, there were those challenges where it's like, why are you acting like, even though I was there, quote unquote, leading and paving the way, right? Their side of the family still was like, don't act like this, don't do these things. But now that they see it's something that they can't change, they're like, let's just focus on the fact that they're doing well.
Now, I want to jump into an article on an issue that happened a couple of months back with Kayla Smith, a trans male pilot who was discriminated in the workplace. So Smith, an experienced flight instructor, who has flown close to 2,500 hours, trained dozens of commercial pilots and delivered tons of aid to countries in crisis, was grounded after his latest medical medical in January. Two appeals have been unsuccessful and a third is pending. He told the Sunday Times this week the situation had forced him to out himself publicly and declare his status as a transgender man. Now he goes on to say, and now for some hope of retribution, I have to out myself. Where is the justice? He asked, describing the aviation authority's stance as purposefully digging in against me. We navigate different workspaces, be it corporate, be it creative. How have you guys navigated your gender expression in spaces where you are working? And has it been difficult? Because sometimes it is a creative space.
Yeah, I think first, I mean, the story, like, you know, when I first heard it, it really, really broke my heart, because I then remembered of many queer people, and I think mostly my late trans friend, Lisiba, may his soul rest in peace, whom was actually forced to go to work as a guy because the ID said she wasn't female. And I look at also how also if I had never even pushed harder and created more opportunities that just doesn't need me to work in one space, I would still be very much marginalized. Yes, I still am, but it would be worse. There are a lot of spaces where I'd be very, very, very much limited and not being wanted to be at because I'm trans. I'm going to offend viewers and many. Ask yourself, why haven't you seen a trans woman playing lead role in South Africa, which we have many other trans women that are talented. Why haven't you seen a trans person really being on a big brand, not even just a campaign endorsement, you know, because brands are just like, what if, you know, the consumer doesn't take it well? So unfortunately, those that are deciding, they are thinking themselves to say, what if? It's not a matter of, okay, people are not going to receive this well. Because I think we have had a proven record to say, yes, there are trans people that have done this and have succeeded. Because I really think if that's the case, I would have never been where I am, because it's not like what I do doesn't need a public consumption. It's need public consumption, and I do get that support. So it's really those people that are in power saying no to us, basically.
Yeah, and also, I'll just cast the net a bit wider. There also is the crisis that a lot of people themselves were not allowed to be as great as you are.
As you are, that's true.
Right? So it's like, you must be great. And I was forced to wear a suit, even though when I get home, I put on my heels, and absolutely not, right? And I am first, like, got a sense of this consuming a lot of content in Hollywood, right? Where it's like, oh, what's happening here is that there is a long history of queer people who have been forced to stay in the closet for success, right? Then you bring it home to South Africa, and then it's on another level, happening day in and day out. And I don't want to be too controversial, but people might not want you to shine and do well, but when you are in the room at their event, trust and believe their hand is in your pants, trying to do something to
of
you.
Of course.
Right? Trying to somewhat gain what they don't feel that other people should experience on a public platform. What does that speak to? That speaks to double standards. That speaks to duplicity, right? And that's something that we have to deal with a lot in this industry, where because of the time that people came up in to get to those positions of leadership, they couldn't be who we were. But then they see, I was going to be a CEO and a media mogul. I'm going to stand in her way.
People stand in our ways, guys.
Because they see where you're going.
It shocks me. My other late friend, Iko. I mean, Iko was, Iko Mesh was really a change maker. Iko Mesh, an icon.
Freaking,
you know,
icon.
Died without being on the cover of a magazine. Died without having had a Glamour Woman of the Year,
award.
Style Award, a Feather Award, you know. And for me, that's such a shame
that's
to say,
shock.
you have people that, you know, are so powerful that really, really brought about change. And all these people didn't see a need to have her do all that. And even still post her, we still don't have trans women that have had. Mm. On, I've never picked up a magazine and I see a trans woman on the cover. Mm. You know, it's such. Instead, then they would say, okay, let's just have her on a digital one, you know, just for inclusion. Mm. That's why I hate the term inclusion, because for me, it really are saying this was never meant for you in the first place. So let's just have you just to tick the box.
And yeah, it's like such a shame. Like those pride flags in June.
Yeah.
Oh my Jesus, Lord, like, are you kidding me?
What is the right way to create safe spaces then, in, other than sort of pandering by doing inclusion or throwing flags everywhere? What is the right way to actually do this work?
Give people the opportunities that they deserve at any given moment where they're supposed to be in those spaces. Mm-hmm. Don't think of them just because there's a campaign that just come up, then I need to have an inclusion kind of discussion, you know, to say I had everybody in that space. If really Ayaya is deserving into be in a space, even if it was a December, a family issue, have Yaya there because, you know, Nai, she also has, you know, was a discussion around family. Mm-hmm. You know, I look at when South Africa is celebrating Women's Month, I'm like, where are trans women? Mm. Are you really, like, honestly saying we aren't supposed to be in these spaces? And I remember, so I there's an exhibition that I did during Women's Month, and I got a lot of, like, offensive questions from branded where I was looking for support from. And I could just tell that, you know, these people are really saying, no, this is not for you. It's for women that were naturally born or, you know, assigned female at birth.
Cisgender women.
Cisgender women. And it's such a shame that, you know, many years later, we still are faced with such issues, and it's still going to go on for a long time if really we don't put our best foot forward to say really things need to change.
That's it. Putting your best foot forward and being a better human being, right? That's always, it's not about being kind to the LGBT community.
Be
a better human being. And that will guide you in everything you do, because then it makes you sensitive to all kinds of people, right? Because when you are doing a June Pride Month campaign or August Women's Month, it just means that someone told you that, you know, it's a certain time of the year, do
so
this.
So better do something.
But your inner compass isn't telling you nothing.
Absolutely.
Because we live in a world of horrible human beings.
That wraps it up very nicely for me, actually. Thank you so much, guys. Now, we usually end on a very high, lovely note with something we called What Made You Go Ooh this week. This could be anything that you enjoyed, found interesting, that was made you go like, oh, what an Oprah moment for me. I mean, I'll go first and say my ooh of this week was reading a book called Herc. It's called Hercules, but looking at him as a bisexual baddie of note, which was very interesting for me to see sort of historical fictional character in that view. So that was a very interesting read and made me go ooh. So what made you go ooh this week?
Mine is actually a bad one. Oh. It's not a good thing. So I had a very unfortunate incident on Saturday. It was supposed to be such a special day for me, and a lot of great things were supposed to be happening. So I got assaulted by my security guard at my place of residence in Houghton. And upon me going to open a case, I ended up calling the police because the security guard then locked the gate. Instead of police actually assisting me, then they asked the perpetrator to tell his side of the story before I open a case. And I was just like, okay, is that how things work? And then they convinced me to say, just sort things out. I said, but I don't want to sort things out. Do you understand? So they then said, did she beat you? Then the guy said, yes, he did. She did. And then they said, you have to open a case. Then they convinced to open a, him to open a case against me so that I could sort things out. I said, no, I don't want to sort things out. And then they came to a point, said, okay, you will both get arrested. I said, it's fine. If it means that that's how I'm sorting things out, let's both get arrested. And that's what ended up happening. And that was my ooh moment. Okay, is that how really things are supposed to
happen? Where are you standing with that now? Because I'm slightly enraged for you.
Of course, then I got Access Chapter 2 to intervene and get me a lawyer. And yesterday we went to court. And so the process is going to move forward. But I think that really, really taught me to say the justice system in South Africa is really, really a mess, especially for the those that are not privileged, ones that are discriminated. If really police are the ones that says sort things out and go back to the same space where you are victimized, it's a big problem that we are facing. And I told myself to say, for me, being in a police cell for I don't know how many hours is not going to change my mind to say, then I need to not get justice. Because if I'm saying let's sort things out, I'm saying he must carry on, and also that South African justice system must always carry on and be like that, and it shouldn't be like that.
You fought a good fight, and continue to fight that. Actually, of course, I think thank you for sharing that.
No, it's
I have so many questions because I think I know where you stay, and that doesn't make sense at that house specifically. That makes. At all. My moment was, you know, the idea of paying it forward, do something for someone. And then, you know, because I helped someone who's in another country just make a connection. And purely from the goodness of my heart and knowing that, oh, I know you, I know this person, let me put you together. And, you know, in the journey of creating things as an artist, there's always a, how the hell am I going to do this? You know, like the how. And I think, yes, because of the goodness of that person that I'd helped, they randomly were just like, do you by any chance need A, B, C, D? Which were the things I needed in that specific moment, right? And I did. And I was like, look at life, you know, just by doing one small thing that costs you nothing, it comes back to help you some way in the future without you even planning for it. And so that's my parting shot to everyone. Do good. Desire to do well. Like I said, be a good human being. See how it works out for you.
Get that good karma.
Period.
All right. Thank you so much for joining me, guys, for a wonderful conversation. Remember, you can always catch our podcast free on Iono and all streaming platforms. And make sure to tune into our next episode. And you never know what the next topic may be. We'll surprise y'all, as we do on Sex and Everything in Between.